Notebooks and news beats, hear that piano rail. Take down the fax ace, write up the tale. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet, if only they turn left on Bird Street. Don't be a fool, Ace. Trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Bird Street.
Welcome to Left Turn on Bird Street. This is Dan Gowarty here.
And Tom Nato over here.
We're broadcasting from our flagship station, KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California, the city of gold in the Golden State. So, what are we going to talk about today, Tom?
We're batting 750, Dan. We're hitting three out of four of the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Oh, you mean war, pestilence, famine, and death.
Uh-oh. I'm in trouble already. I thought the four horsemen were politics, corruption, greed, and the GOP.
Tom. Back to the Bible.
By the way, do you know what GOP stands for?
It's the grand old party, isn't it?
Used to.
I can see it coming. Okay, Tom, let's prepare. It's nothing that we have to worry about with the FCC, so I hope. What does GOP stand for, Tom?
Greed, oil, and power. But moving on to more interesting news.
Okay. Well, seriously now, we have several things we want to cover, and we want to welcome you for joining us on Left Turn on Bird Street. And this week has been an extraordinary week in terms of news cycle we've had.
No kidding.
Indictments of Tom DeLay.
And of the right people.
And the right people. Yeah, exactly. We've had a new Supreme Court Justice, the Chief Justice installed, and we've had a nomination for another Supreme Court Justice, and of course we, the ongoing situation in Iraq. But I think we need to start this hour off with a very, very important thing, and notice that George W. Bush, in case you didn't know it, communicates regularly with, fill in the banks, is it A, Karl Rove, B, Dick Cheney, C, God, or D, all of the above?
I was going to guess Cheney.
Wrong. Guess again.
His mother.
Wrong. Guess again.
His bail bondsman.
Well, that's who we hopefully will be talking to soon. No, George W. Bush. Tom, you got it wrong. You got it wrong, Tom. Don't you know, Tom, George W. Bush regularly communicates with God? And you know why we're in Iraq and Afghanistan? Because why? Any guess? Anyone? Anyone?
He told them to?
Tom! You have telepathy. You actually know that. Yes, indeed. You know, this is a story that came out this week that George W. Bush was told by God.
But you know, was told by God to go into Iraq, or did he actually say, God, I'm going in Iraq, whether you like it or not?
let's see. I think it's the former,
you
know, Tom.
Hollywood agents will tell you who called who. Did this start off with he called upon God, or did God come up in a dark cloud over his head, a little bit of rain, say, I'm communicating with you now, because press agents will tell you that you're not a star if you call them.
That's true.
You are a star if they call you.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think in this case, George W. Bush, our dear leader, thinks,
equals,
yeah, thinks that God is talking to him. And it's revealed in a BBC film that is coming out later this month, a documentary, and according to the former Palestinian foreign minister, and I have to apologize beforehand if I butcher this individual's name, Nabil Shaith, I think, says, according to reports, and this particular one I have is from The Guardian Unlimited, says that Mr. Bush told a Palestinian delegation in 2003 that God spoke to him and said, quote, George, go and fight these terrorists in Afghanistan. And also, quote, George, go and end the tyranny in Iraq. So, you know, he's got a direct line to God.
Isn't it funny how God speaks speaks like a press agent.
Right. He speaks to directly.
Go and relieve the voters of.
Right. Anyhow, in this forthcoming documentary by the BBC, and I don't have a name for the documentary itself, the foreign minister told the filmmaker, President Bush said to all of us, I'm driven with a mission from God. God would tell me, George, go and fight those terrorists in Afghanistan. And I did. And then God would tell me, George, go and end the tyranny in Iraq. And I did. So, you know, there you have it. George W. The reason we're, you know, this is, you know, this is another point we haven't thought of. The first reason we went to Afghanistan and then Iraq was first, A, because terrorism threat. Then B, it was a weapons of mass destruction. Now C, it was to spread democracy. And now it's D, because God told them to.
Well, you know, consider the wording of that. George, go. George, go, instead of go, George, go, George. Right. Now, I think that one was more supposedly directive, but go jump in the lake, George.
Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Tom.
Oh, anyway, I was looking at another version of that, another reporter's version of that event, and he's quoting an Abu Mazen was at the same meeting and recounts how President Bush told them, I have a moral and religious obligation, so I will get you a Palestinian state.
Jeez, unbelievable.
This Abercrombie and Fitch?
Yeah, right.
Like Macy's? You get them there?
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to go get you a Palestinian state. Well, this is going to come out in the documentary, like we said. And this isn't something that's made by a some sort of political group. This is made by the BBC. Reputable probably one of the most reputable news organizations in the world.
And they've seen a war or two themselves.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. They've been invaded, you know, for years and years. Well, not years, but in World War II. Of course, invaded. The White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan denied the reports, according to the story in The Guardian. It says, no, that's absurd. He's never made such comments. You know, who
do
you believe?
And they get it on tape and on film.
Yeah, of course, they got it on.
You know, don't these guys talk to each other?
There's two ways to take this story there's lots of ways to take this story. On the first level, you know, the whole bit between George Bush's so-called conversion to Christianity after a hard night of drinking when he turned 40.
Reaffirmation, more like.
Yeah. You know, on a certain level, you know, part of me says that he is, you know, he plays this God bit to the masses. You know, and I think it's a as much as anything, it's a ploy. It's a politically motivated. Karl Rove and probably Billy Graham and his infamous walk with him down the beach in Kennebunkport, Maine, probably tell him, you have all this right in front of you. Just say you're born again, and it will be yours. So they're playing to the masses. But the other part that's more that concerns me more is that if Bush is truly a born-again Christian, and if we take this in the context of what we talked about last time, the allegations and reports that Bush has been hitting the bottle again, it makes you wonder, if this guy is hitting the bottle, is he really saying this? If this guy is delusional? I mean,
well, you know,
does he have some sort of psychosis?
And where is it leading? When you were mentioning the walk on the beach at Kennebunkport,
yes,
you know, I'm familiar with that, coming from that area,
right?
And I was just imagining a sort of like brass, heavily guarded monument at the beach in Kennebunkport,
right?
In the same way they have like a memorial at Auschwitz. You know, this is where it happened.
The death sentences where thousands of people were sealed here.
Exactly.
But you know, the part that, you know, and this is a, you know, I guess each person's interpretation. I obviously think that Bush, you know, we've discussed this over the last 2 years. In fact, this is the second anniversary of Left Turn Anniversary. We failed to say that at the top of this hour. We'll get to that later. But, you know, over the last 2 years, we've discussed this, you know, fairly extensively. Does Bush really believe in this stuff, A, and or B, I'm doing a lot of multiple choice, you notice that today?
Yeah.
Or B, is this just purely motivated by politics? And I go back and forth. I think obviously B is always in the equation.
Selection D, the one about just for politics, that's the one that I...
Yeah, just for politics. But, you know, if you are to take that this guy is, is spiritual as he says he is, and he's saying he's talking to God, I mean, this is the type of thing, you know, that people out on the street that whose brains are fried on drugs or alcohol, you know, they'll say, God has sent me, I'm here, you know, the rapture's coming, and God is coming. You know, these people are, you know, they're mentally ill.
I think you figured out the reason behind those long periods of a blank stare on his face.
Yeah, right.
God is on his earphone and stopped and started telling him something. So he's standing like that, you know, that right. My eyes are kind of drooping, and he's just standing there. He's just getting his words from the God, a God, several gods, you know, at the same time to say the next sentence.
Well, you know, he is in direct communication with God, and he's just, you know, receiving the information from God above, and he's acting as a conduit for God's message, I guess. God told him to go to Afghanistan. He told him to go to Iraq.
Do they have cell phone rates like this, you know, that you can get, you know, so many minutes, or you can get it, pay more and get a full access or unlimited access?
Well, you know, the other thing that we wanted to talk a little bit about is relates to George W. Bush, and we don't want to turn this into the George W. Bush hour, although so much evolves around this corrupt administration. Is last show we mentioned, and we posted on our blog at www.ltobs.blogspot.com, that it's been reported, granted it was in the National Enquirer, that Bush is hitting the bottle again. And we talked about it on our last show, and it's been out there a little bit. But I was doing a little research for our show the other night, Tom, and I sent this link to you. It's kind of interesting, and it's about Bush's drinking. And I found a website. Where is this thing? Ah, dang it. Where did I have that? Okay. Ah, okay, here it is. It's a website on the Internet. It's called gambling911.com. And it says gambling911.com sponsors post odds on Bush drinking problem claimed by National Enquirer.
And it's a horse race.
Yeah. And actually this gambling911.com is you can bet on a number of things for George W. Bush. The first one is Bush exposed for drinking alcohol during his presidency is featured with odds of 5-1. Not bad, not bad. Compare that with 15-1 odds that Bush actually admits to drinking alcohol.
Long odds there.
Now there's some more interesting things you can bet on in case you're a gaming sort of person. Bush checking into alcohol rehab program is listed with 40-1 odds. So what they're saying, it's more likely he'll admit to it than actually go into a rehab at Betty Ford. This is a really interesting one, Tom. You'll like this one. This is a good bet. Bush becoming a preacher is listed with 2-1 odds. Very interesting. Bush converting to Judaism is listed with 300-1 odds. And Bush becoming a Muslim is posted with 500-1 odds.
Wow. Well, those are really long odds. But, you know, I think they ought to have several categories other than that. For instance, they should have odds that Bush won't be able to find his presidential limousine without the aid of his too many for that one. And then the keys are lost. And,
right.
And then what are the odds on him passing out in a restroom someplace?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Excuse me. Here's another good one. Now, there are odds that, I'm assuming this would be after his presidency is finished, which won't come quick enough, by the way. Bush becomes a spokesman for blank is listed with 35-1 odds. Now, any guess what he'd be a spokesperson for? What are the most logical guesses?
Hagen-Haig Pinch.
What's that?
Hagen-Haig Pinch.
What's that?
It's a fancy, expensive scotch from Scotland.
Well, you know, I only drink the cheap scotches, so wrong. How about he'll do a Bob Dole? Does that give you any clue?
Oh, yes, well, can we say this on the air?
Yes, we can say it on the air. He'll become a spokesman for?
Viagra.
Yeah, Viagra or Cialis, which they list as...
What's the Cialis part? I don't know about
that. Okay, how can I explain this delicately? Viagra is for instantaneous response. So you take your Viagra and the response.
Oh, don't tell me the others for long-lasting results.
It is. It's like 36 hours. Yeah, that's how they advertise it on TV. You take this pill and, you know, you can do whatever it is you want to do within this 36-hour period. And that's how they promote it. And then the best part.
I can see why they kept drug ads off TV for a long, long time.
The best part of that commercial for this one, it says, if you know, if your condition, particularly that you want, lasts for more than 4 hours, call your doctor because there's something wrong.
Right. Yes, I'm sure.
What
yes.
Man, you know.
But have your doctor call the doctor.
But actually, you know, I think Bush might be, that might be a good job for him. You know, a pitchman for Viagra Cialis after he's done with his presidency. And if you think that's a good job for him and he thinks it's a good fit, you can bet on it. They're 35-1 odds. So, but actually, the one that's most interesting, and, you know, people make fun of these people that make the spread. Now, shouldn't they make fun of them? But, you know, you go to Las
and
Vegas.
The voting spread for baseball.
Yeah, the bookies. These
football,
guys,
yeah.
You know, these are the guys
that's
with.
That's the word.
Yeah, the, you know, the odds makers
is right.
Odds makers, that's the actual name. Those guys are usually pretty damn accurate, you know. And they're saying there's a 2-1 odds that Bush will become a preacher. So, you know, you can see he'd be right there with Falwell and Pat Dobson. Well, Pat Dobson isn't a preacher. Falwell, Robinson, all these other guys focus on family and whatnot.
Pat Roberts, I think, is in, but I think Dobson's name is like James Dobson.
Yeah, James Dobson. He's not a preacher, though.
Well, he's acting like one.
Well, he's acting like one.
I don't think he is a. No, I think he gives sermons, conducts his. Anybody can do that. I can do it.
Well, you can open up a church, you know, any place. You know, Tom, maybe that's our calling. Maybe we should open up a church. What do you think about that? Well, we get tax-free status.
At another time, I was telling you about the. Upstairs Church of Jesus Christ and God.
Yeah, Berkeley, right.
I mean, if they can do it, anybody can do it. There is this church you can mail away, the Universal Church of Universalists or something like that.
Oh, that's right. That's how Mary...
Unitarian Universalists, yeah.
Well, you know, at KRBS, when Kathy Popa and Dan got married...
She performed the service.
Marianne, the station manager, Marianne Norzer, performed the service. She got... It's a legitimate thing. She got her... license or accreditation from a church in Modesto, California.
Where do I sign up?
Yeah, and the clerk in the county recognized it, and I guess is recognized throughout the United States. So, you know, maybe there's an out for us. Maybe we should. You know, we've been going about this
all
along.
That would make this tax deductible, would it?
Yes, we should make this a tax-exempt program, you know, become preachers, and then voila, you know, we can be join the likes of Falwell, because that's where the real money is.
If you can't beat them, join them.
That's right. Yeah, beat them at their own game, I guess. Yeah. Anyhow, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other Monday from 8 until 9:55 in the morning on KRBS, and... Well, the other big event that happened this week, aside from it being revealed that our dear leader, George W. Bush, has a direct line with God, was the nomination of Harriet Myers.
Who was another fundamentalist Jesus freak.
Right, and I have a few theories on the whole nomination, but she was nominated to replace retiring Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. And we have Tom kind of found an interesting story about
Myers. Well, first,
Myers.
I want to hear your take on her briefly, because I want to see how closely it matches. This is somebody who actually knows what he's talking about.
Versus us, who we just shooting from the hip here. Actually, I have two different theories on the nomination of Harriet Myers. The first theory is that given all the complaints coming from the conservative spectrum, is I think... There's a good possibility that it's a smokescreen, that this lady is really, really very conservative. They're faking people into thinking that she is something that she isn't, when in actuality she's very conservative. I think that would be kind of the conventional wisdom theory. The other one is a bit out there. It's self-admitted. It's a kind of a far-reaching theory. But I actually think that on a certain level, Bush nominated her with the thought that she will, she's a shill. In other words, I think that she'll withdraw her own name from consideration, and I think it was a part of a plan. The reason being is I think they want people to get people and non-conservatives, and even for that matter, work up conservatives, supposedly work up the conservatives, so that they spend all the, expend a lot of energy on her. And then
shoot their load on her.
Exactly.
And they're too exhausted for the next. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for that, and you're not the only one that thinks that way. I have a different take on it, as we've talked before.
Right.
But this is an article from the column Mondo Washington, mm-hmm. authored by James Ridgway, a regular columnist for the Village Voice,
uh-huh.
with the assistance of Isabel Huacucha. It's H-U-A-C-A. Sorry. H-U-A-C-U-G-A.
Huaga.
Huaha, because of the J and it could be H. But anyway, so I'm spelling it because I couldn't begin this to be sure that I was going to pronounce that correctly. But to give you a clue of where they're going with this story, they've saying in a little sidebar here, see also another story by Ward Harkavy called Myers Saying This. About Bush.
Okay.
The smartest man I've ever met.
Oh, man. I mean,
she's smart.
When I heard that, let me just butt in here, Tom. When I heard her say that, I thought either this lady's incredibly dumb or, you know.
Or well paid.
Yeah, or very well paid. Yeah. On the tape.
Anyway, this story from Ridgway gives some advanced information on this thing and sort of builds it to this, but it really starts this way. The story goes like this on Myers and Bush and why she might be a candidate for this. Apparently in January 1996, then Texas Governor George Bush received an anonymous letter claiming that Nora Linares, director of the Texas Lottery Commission, was in cahoots with a former employer and a boyfriend to rip off the commission. Supposedly, the boyfriend, convicted of an unrelated federal bribery charge, was using state equipment and personnel to work on a private contract he had with GTEC, a technical firm that runs lotteries. They do them in California.
Oh, is that right?
They did the scratches when they first came out. That's the company contracted to carry out the Texas lottery. According to reports in the Houston Chronicle from that time, Linares claimed she knew nothing about this, even though the boyfriend was running his business out of her cousin's New Mexico apartment address.
I love that. That is his classic right there.
What, me? And him? Not me. I mean, at first, Bush and his then-assistant, Myers, did nothing. But eventually, Myers was sent over to the commission to straighten things out. This raised eyebrows at the time, since Myers' law firm represented a company which had a major contract with a lottery. Linares was fired, and in March 1997, the commission put the GTEC contract up for rebid. Then in June, one Lawrence Litwin, a Democrat, was hired to run the lottery, which had been set up in 1992. At the time, Myers, now chair of the lottery commission, said of Litwin, his extensive business, technical, and lottery experience, his knowledge of lottery products offered by vendors, and his knowledge of the procurement process will be of great benefit. He is a man of integrity who will further develop and maintain strict controls at the commission and ensure operations that are above reproach.
Sounds reasonable.
When Litwin took over, he received a report from the state auditor critical of both GTEC and the Lottery Commission for failure to conduct proper accounting. Litwin hired the firm of Deloitte and Touche to run more audits, and they allegedly revealed that GTEC had seriously violated its contract. His investigation also revealed what were described as illegal campaign contributions.
Wait, this is in Texas.
This is Texas.
Tom DeLay. Oh, okay, go ahead.
At that point, according to Litwin, Myers and other commission members ordered him to stop the investigation. Finding something out? Stop there. The upshot of the affair was that GTEC, even though not the low bidder, got its contract back and, according to Litwin, never corrected its auditing breaches. In other words, things stayed the same.
Right.
Litwin was fired that October.
Jeez.
After only 5 months on the job, yeah. The commission would only say it had lost confidence in him. The personnel files say he was dismissed for, quote, reasons unknown, because they put the wrong stuff in, they could be sued.
Right.
In a subsequent 1999 lawsuit, Litwin claimed GTEC was engaged in a questionable dealings through its chief Texas lobbyist in 1997, Ben Barnes, former lieutenant governor. Right. Barnes hit the headlines during Bush's first campaign because he supposedly was the man who got young George out of the draft and into the Texas National Guard, a charge he denied. Litwin's suit was eventually settled for $300,000. Barnes's deposition, in which the National Guard matter was mentioned, disappeared.
Ooh.
So let's see. They fired him. They claimed it was because he no longer satisfied them. He sues, wins $300,000, and their version of the story disappears from the file. No dishonesty there.
You know, and what's Meyer's involvement in all of this?
Well, she was the head of the commission that hired the guy and then fired him.
Right, I see.
And then said he's an angel on this one, devil
right,
on that end,
right.
Only because he came up with information that might be damaging to
Bush. Right.
And one of the things that's been mentioned in other stories about other members of the Bush staff is that loyalty and protection of him are the key ingredients for getting hired. In other words, if you'll fall on the sword for him, if you'll lie, if you'll just make sure that he doesn't get anything,
right.
His reputation is sullied, then you're okay. You don't have to know anything. You just have to be faithful.
Right. Well, I think, you know, we were talking about this earlier. You said it pretty accurately that Myers is what you would call, in your experience, in political experience, with
a fixer. Part,
a fixer, yeah. And why don't you tell our listeners what a fixer is?
A fixer is a person, and they may have all kinds of titles or no title at all. They're usually not known to the public. Mm-hmm. They could be a driver for a candidate, or they could be just a sort of a. I used to know when last name was Coakley, long dead, but he just rode around with the congressman. And when anybody needed to be talked to, or the other phrase at the time was made aware.
Made aware.
And so I rode around with them for a while. And they sat in the back of a limousine, and they go through some files, and the congressman would say to hand it over to Coakley and take care of this. And I went around with, and this is the guy I learned a little bit from, and he would go and find out what he needed to know and make a case and go visit the person that needed to be straightened out and would sit there and say, well, these are the facts and these are the outcomes and what do you think? There is not many people have ever done this, but it's the real world of politics.
It's really, you know, in the way you describe it, it's like a stealth
it's a gentlemanly way of doing things.
Yeah. So Myers, you think Myers is that type of person for George W. Bush?
Yeah. Only I think she's more of a bulldog kind of person. You know, stiff and. But yeah, you know, we got a problem over here. She's a lawyer. You know, knows the law. You got a big office. You call him in, saying, you know, it could go this way or it could go that way. Which do you think is in your interests? This one or that one?
Okay.
That's good. Make that the choice.
So using your theory, Tom, if she is in fact a fixer, and let's take this. Look at this from another angle. If Myers is a fixer for George W. Bush, can one then make the connection that if he gets her appointed to the Supreme Court, he's going to help Bush out politically when he gets on the top bench, at least with one vote, or maybe trying to sway other people?
Exactly. And that's, first of all, it explains why people are saying, well, she's got no legal decisions, she's got no track record. That's not how it works in that line, that end of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I should have mentioned this. I wrote a book about a fixer.
Is that right?
Bow tie.
Oh, yeah, right.
And it made the rounds of some publishers. It almost got sold. But, it pretty much goes into how they operate and what they do and how they make things happen that the public never sees. Oftentimes, the candidates are not supposed to know because they won't have to deny it later on.
Okay, so let's go back to one of my theories. You know, I stick with the one of the two theories. The primary theory is that she is very conservative. She's a self-avowed evangelical, I think, for if memory serves me correctly, for at least the last 25 years. Bush claims that he doesn't know her views on things like abortion and whatnot. I actually think she's far more conservative than the president lets on. And I think, you know, I think a lot of the conservatives are just blowing hot air over it because they've been told to blow hot air over it as a kind of a diversionary tactic. So she does, in fact, get on the high court under the premise that, well, she's kind of a moderate person, she's not an extremist or anything like this.
And her history of being very faithful to him would indicate that she would be a good candidate for taking the beating on it for
right.
a promise of something later on. But the reason I disagree with that is that I don't think they have the time on it. I think that events around the world, everything from the weather to the way politics are popularity is falling, so many people are being indicted or are just about to go talk to the Fitzgerald
right.
again, is that I think that they don't have time to be that sophisticated. I think that it's a serious one. They got to get somebody up there to lock his not guilty or a favorable outcome for him right now.
Well, you know, the other thing you brought up earlier, and it's a good point that should not be overlooked, is that the Bush is known for loyalty. I have another word for it, and it's not loyalty. Bush likes to surround himself by yes men. He doesn't like dissent within his inner circle. So I think if we're to look at Meyer's position as in the inner circle, Her views probably very much reflect George W. Bush's view, or conversely, you know, she wouldn't be in the inner circle unless she had views that were sufficiently identical to George W. Bush. So if we're putting, and she says she thinks George W. Bush is one of the smartest people she's ever met, we're basically putting a George W. Bush clone of sorts on the Supreme Court.
And like, oh no, he's really smart. All those stupid things, they actually had an ulterior motive that you can't understand because you're not as smart as he is.
Right.
The reason they have to have faithful people like that is that they can't have any conflict between, you can't have a Secretary of State or a key staff member who will confront the president and say, no, you can't look at it that way, you could look at it over this way because it could go that way because we've had some experience with that. No, because I think they're afraid of him cracking.
What, you think his staff is afraid of him cracking?
Yeah, I think that the, well, not the staff so much as the real movers and shakers, Cheney and the guys who are really behind him, don't want him to be put in a position in which stress goes up, his drinking goes up, he cracks and blurts out something, because he's had based upon what I've read in the papers and stuff, he's had sometimes outbursts in his previous life when he wasn't a godly non-drinker kind of thing.
Well, I've even read, Tom, though, in some news reports and on the internets that George W. Bush likes to drop the F-bomb frequently in the White House with staffers and whatnot, and he's very belligerent.
Yeah, but you're also going to mention this, is that reporters haven't put any pressure on him so far. It's their lickspittles, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm not the only one. You can read it.
Right.
But now, as soon as a weakness is spotted, you become the wildebeest with the limp, and
right.
the wolves come right after you because you're trailing the herd. And as soon as they see any signs of weakness, the press will move in on him, and that's what they're afraid of too.
Well, you know, that brings up another question, kind of unrelated to Myers, and maybe we spend a few minutes on this. You know, Bush has, for the most part, even before 9/11, he's gotten a lot of passes from the press. In large part because, you know, much
right
of the press
from the count, or the vote count. It was
right,
bad.
Yeah, exactly. In large part, a lot of the press was giving him a pass because much of the press nowadays that covers the White House, that has access to the White House, with the exception of Jeff Gannon, is major, you know, I guess you could say he is too, is corporate, you know, it's corporate media. So they've given the press, but do you sense that there is a kind of a shift in the way Bush is being covered now? There's it's more critical.
Well, no, I see this is that management is Republican and much of the press corps now is Republican, but there are some real good reporters out there who are neither one, and they want the story, and he's the story. And they're, as he cracks, their talents become available,
right,
and more likely to be used because, hey, the management and the editors know this is the story. I mean, we can't be left behind. And I think that there's, in the next several months, there'll be some very interesting news, and it won't all be good for Bush.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, Fitzgerald's investigation, that's coming.
Yeah, the Fitzgerald investigation is coming in. So, actually, in a way, Myers, the nomination of Myers might actually relate to this because indictments might be handed down that might ultimately connect several White House insiders and whose cases might ultimately be heard by the Supreme Court.
You got to fix the jury.
Right. So, you know, there's one story, in fact, the plane gate that I pulled off the internet. So
how recent is that?
This is from Wednesday, last Wednesday, and it says investigations, this is from Newsmax, a conservative website, in fact, it says investigations in the case of the leaked identity of CIA operative Valerie Plame may yield indictments in the next few days. Reuters reported late Wednesday that federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald will decide within days if he plans to bring indictments. The wire service said Fitzgerald was expected to notify officials by letter if they have become targets, an indication that he is ready to seek a criminal indictment against them. Fitzgerald's two-year probe into the Plame case is expected to end in the next month. Fitzgerald has several options, including bringing indictments, making plea agreements with targets, or concluding the case has no prosecution. Press reports have indicated that senior Bush administration officials, including political advisor Karl Rove and Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff, Louis Scooter Libby, are among the key persons of interest in Fitzgerald's probe. So this might all very well be connected to the nomination of Myers, because it'd be very convenient if she was on the Supreme Court and these guys, that their case came up before Bush could pardon them, that she'd be a plant. She's an insider there.
She's a swing vote?
Yeah.
Or the guaranteed vote. Not even a swing vote. Guaranteed vote. The anyway, the last few days there's been talk about it, and it's getting closer and closer. In fact, only a day or so ago, the LA Times was running an article, fairly long on it. The David Johnson of the New York Times and the also some input from the LA Daily News ran a story that says the prosecutor in the CIA leak case is exploring a range of possible crimes, lawyers in the case say, suggesting that the investigation has moved well beyond its initial focus on whether anyone in the Bush administration illegally disclosed the identity of a CIA operative. That would be Plame.
Plame. Valerie Plame.
Right. In recent days, the prosecutor, Patrick J. Fitzgerald, has accelerated the pace of his inquiry in an apparent effort to conclude the case before the grand jury's term expires on October 28th. He has indicated.
Indicated. Big difference there.
Right.
A difference a few letters makes.
Just so my language is clear here. He has indicated to several lawyers that he might be preparing to bring charges, but he has not yet made a decision. Fitzgerald has asked to meet Tuesday with Judith Miller, a reporter for the New York Times. That's coming Tuesday. Who, after 85 days in jail, testified last week to the grand jury about her conversations with I. Louis Libby, that's Scooter, and Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff. The meeting is expected to focus on newly discovered notes compiled by Miller that refer to a conversation she had with Libby on June 25, 2003, according to a lawyer in the case who did not want to be named, because Fitzgerald has cautioned against discussing the case. Until now, the only conversations known to have occurred between Miller and Libby were on July 8th and 12th, 2003. new information. Anyway, the Fitzgerald has also asked Karl Rove, the senior White House advisor, to appear before the grand jury later next week. That would be his fourth time.
Yes.
For what would be considered his fourth round of the testimony. Rove's lawyer, Robert D. Luskin, said the appearance is in response to his offer to make Rove available to the prosecutor earlier in the year. That's the same as when your kid gets in trouble.
Yes.
Comes home and you say, well, no, you better go down to the police station, turn yourself now, because don't make them come here because they'll make the charge different.
Right. That's true. You know, it's going to be.
And I'm not saying that any of your kids did that, but I'm saying you're in a generic sort of sense.
Oh, my kids are never. They're angels, right? Perfect angels. But in all seriousness, with this case, what's interesting about it is that, if I'm not mistaken, is Fitzgerald is a Republican, or you know, he's appointed by a Republican, and while the House and nothing can happen in the House or the Senate, obviously, because it's Republican controlled, it'll be very interesting to see if he buckles under the pressure, or you know, if he comes back that there's no indictments. But he's been very closed lip about this. Very few leaks have come out of his investigation.
Well, he runs a tight ship, I've been told.
Right.
And also read the what's interesting here on a very recent opinion piece from another blog says that Espionage Act now front and center in Novak Plamegate. And that's true. And this is one of the unusual aspects, the angle that Fitzgerald is taking. He fooled them all by not taking the way they expected.
Right.
And he's going through the Espionage Act for a case that's easier to prove.
Right. Well, it should be pointed out that the original investigation has to do, you know, in case any of our listeners don't know it, was Valerie Plame was a CIA operative. She was, and she is, the husband of Joseph Wilson. Wilson was sent to Niger to investigate claims of the yellow cake uranium, which he ultimately said didn't pan out. He wrote a piece in the New York Times saying as such, and it is alleged that somebody in the White House, it's not alleged, somebody in the White House did out Valerie Plame in retribution for Wilson's outing Bush, kind of. So it's a tit-for-tat retribution sort of thing that's basically boiled down to.
All of the somebody in the White House, all of this could have been resolved in a week.
How so?
Bush calls employees and says, okay, who did this?
Yeah.
And tell the truth.
Well, that's going to bring up another interesting aspect. Is Bush has gone on record saying that anybody who's violated the law on this will be fired. So it'll be interesting to see if indictments are brought against Louis Libby or Karl Rove, and if in fact Bush fires them or if they resign on their own.
Well, I don't have that story in front of me right here, mm-hmm. but I have seen some reports that. They have, by making the link to Rove,
yes,
as they apparently have done,
mm-hmm.
that makes an automatic link to Bush and Cheney.
Yes, absolutely.
Because Bush does nothing without talking to Rove, because everything is political.
Right.
And so now we're not only just out in the West Wing, mm-hmm. we're now here in the Oval Office.
Right.
So although this may not result in indictments of the president, because you can't indict the president, all you can do is sort of suggest that
Nixon was unindicted co-conspirator, I think, actually, is what the legal term was for Nixon.
Anyway, a name familiar from the past, Daniel Shore.
Oh, yeah, great guy. You know, he was.
Is he still around?
He's still around. He's a commentator on NPR. He's well into his 80s. He was fired from CBS because of his political stances on several things. And interestingly, for our listeners who may not know Daniel Shore, he was a White House correspondent for CBS during the throes of Watergate. And Dan Shore was, and if I'm sure he wears this, he would probably never admit it, as a badge of honor, he was one of the people listed on Nixon's enemies list. Daniel Shore, along with, I think, Robert Redford and
that's sort of like
Paul Newman and several other people.
That's sort of like getting an Academy Award nomination.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, his name pops up here because in a recent column he wrote for the Christian Science Monitor, that would be a couple of days ago.
Yes.
Shore says this, This is, so help me, my last comment on the tangled web of the CIA leak until we get some hard news from Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, whose 2 years of investigation have now lasted longer than the Watergate inquiry. Some word may come soon, now that Judith Miller, the last of the journalists involved, has been heard from. So let's recall how it all started. And he traces it out. And recapping the history of it, moves on to say, so what courses are open to Prosecutor Fitzgerald? Indictment under the 1982 Intelligence Identity Protection Act, if it can be established that unmasking Ms. Plame was a deliberate act. Short of that, there could be an indictment for conspiracy, and that's the one under that I think they're shooting for,
yeah.
Which is defined as acting toward a criminal end, such as leaking security information. Now it's getting easier to prove.
Right.
How high could indictments go? Shore asks. Despite earlier denials of involvement, it is now clear that Presidential Assistant Karl Rove and Vice Presidential Chief of Staff Louis Libby had some role in inviting reporters to dig further. Could this go higher? The prosecutor interviewed President Bush and Vice President Cheney at some length. It is not publicly known if they were implicated. It may be remembered that the Watergate grand jury wanted to indict President Nixon for the obstruction of justice when advised that a sitting president could not be prosecuted. The grand jury named him as an unindicted co-conspirator.
Right.
And things come around. What is it? The W.B. Yeats poem? The widening gyre?
Yeah. It would certainly be interesting, you know, if this would be a interesting case study in years to come if Fitzgerald, because it's already been fairly well established in media reports anyhow that Louis Libby, and Karl Rove were involved in talking to Matt Cooper, Judy Miller, and presumably Robert Novak. They've already been associated with it. And it'll be interesting to see if there are indictments brought against them, because they are obviously connected to this in some fashion, And
over at Axis of Logic, it gets even tougher. In an article entitled "When Bush Comes to Shove," which I like, by Phil Toler.
Uh-huh.
This came a few days ago, but this is what really got me kind of keyed in on this, or this sort of information, not this particular article. It says there's another tsunami forecast for this fall, but there won't be any water involved. The disturbance is of a judicial nature, and what cascades will not be waves. And what cascades will not be waves. 'Tis the season to be indicted, with the neocon Israeli spy cabal first to trial, followed shortly thereafter by that of Tom DeLay and his pals. Next up are the flurry of indictments expected to be handed down from the Patrick Fitzgerald peek into the Plame case, which has enough links to the other crimes to make Oscar Mayer feel inadequate. At minimum, there'll be at least one count each on the heads of Carl the Fat Eunuch Rove and Cheney's henchman Scooter Libby. Well, I didn't make that up. This guy wrote it. But I want to get down here more specifically to speculation is surging, and we're talking like day before yesterday, in the countdown to the indictments being drawn up by Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald in the outing of CIA agent Valerie Plame. While it is focused on Rove and Libby, there is also credible talk of this one blowing wide open because of the peculiar power invested in a prosecutor of the special kind. Bulldog Fitzgerald can run with the ball in any direction he likes, and recalling that the CIA set his series of plays in motion many months ago, you can bet they have fed their man some tasty tidbits. And CIA, not too happy with Bush.
Yeah.
So they have no interest in not telling them things.
Right.
The most obvious trail that the Bulldog has likely sniffed out is the source of the forged documents that were fed to the administration, leading to only one of the many lies that led us to the gates of hell between the rivers in yon Iraq.
You know, as you read this, it conjured up a few images in my mind, and as soon as I say it, I'm sure you'll recognize and know where I'm headed with this. But it looks like they're, on a certain level, their backs are against the wall. And two analogies I want to make. You go back to 1972, the Nixon administration. That's when they broke into the Watergate apartment complex in the DNC national headquarters, and this information was out during the 1972 election, which Nixon handily won over McGovern. And yet, it wasn't until two things had to happen. Judge Sirica, they brought indictments against Halderman and Ehrlichman, and this was sometime in 73. By 74, it was, Nixon had resigned. The timetable is correct. But there was one event that a lot of people really don't remember, and that was the Saturday night massacre.
Exactly, yeah.
Where Archibald Cox was
the special prosecutor.
He was a special prosecutor. Mitchell did the formal firing, but Nixon, in effect, fired him. And I can't help but wonder if somewhere down the road here, if he's going to bring these indictments, is Bush going, or Gonzalez, presumably, and, on Bush's request, are they going to fire this guy if he brings out indictments? It's going to be and this goes back to maybe what you're talking about. It could cause an interesting constitutional crisis.
Well, in view of the facts we actually have in the White House right now,
right,
it won't be a massacre. It'll be very religious. They'll be sent off on sabbatical. They're on a retreat.
Not sabbatical, it's too intellectual. They're on a religious retreat.
Yeah. But also, I want to point out that the images that come to mind as you're reading this stuff, the name Daniel Schorr brings back flushes of memory.
Right.
But if you've ever seen the movie All the President's Men...
Oh, of course, read the book.
Right, too. And the image, though, is what's in the mind, is Robert Redford and Fred Buzzard coming up out of the dark in the underground...
Oh, you mean Deep Throat?
Deep Throat, yeah.
Mark
Felter, coming out of... I'm confusing two guys, Buzzard or Buzzworth or
right,
whatever. Anyway, so the point is, there you have... Getting to my point of this joke is with this stuff coming out, I can see a lot of people coming out and a lot of meetings being held in underground garages right now.
As we speak here.
These guys are not just to turn other people in, they're to protect themselves.
Right. Well, I think that's the key right there, is there's probably going to be a lot of CYA going on right now where, because go back to Watergate, and this is something we can, maybe draw some analogies. The guys who took the early fall were mostly lower-level staff members like Jeb Magruder. There were a lot. These guys were certainly guilty, but a lot of it fell on these lower-level guys, hoping that it would deflect it from Halderman and Ehrlichman.
Throwing the Stewart to the lions, hoping to make the lions too full to eat up.
Right. Another name we haven't mentioned in here, and I've read a little bit about him, and I can't give you the accurate information, but is Ari Fleischer. His name has been thrown around involved in the outing of this because
he
was
wondering
the press
secretary. I think I've mentioned in previous shows is that there's something missing in here, and I think it starts with F.
Yeah.
And the Fleischer. Because he was in the group that structured the original operation in the White House.
Right.
And so all those hidden avenues and all those special relationships and all those things were the work of, or enlarged, or were helped along by Ari Fleischer. And he was a smart guy.
He
got out
right
when the getting was good.
Right, he got out before his name was tarnished. But
for a sabbatical.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, time off with my family. Write a book.
Right, I'm taking some personal time, spending more time with my family. That's the favorite euphemism.
He was generally acknowledged, at least by me, that he's a very smart guy.
Yeah.
It's all right. I wouldn't.
Yeah, manipulative, smart.
Views on things,
right, but
he's
not
smart.
A dumb guy, but yeah, he's a smart guy. So it's going to be interesting. The point I was making earlier, with Archibald Cox and the Saturday Night Massacre, is I wonder, what, and to tie this back into Harriet Meyer, is, and I'm really going out on a limb here, but what happens if Fitzgerald does bring indictments? What happens if Bush or Gonzalez, as Bush's agent, fires him from it. Would this, you know, this could be the grounds, the start of a constitutional crisis of sorts.
Sure, and you know what'll happen is, or could happen, is you don't have to have a trial and a verdict to get to this U.S. Supreme Court. Look what
right.
they did with the vote count in Florida. I mean,
right.
They can, for reasons that are special for the case, can be go directly to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right.
And that's where some of this is going to go.
Right.
And what, now imagine this situation. It gets up there and the votes of Roberts and Meyer make the difference.
Right.
And then think the debate that will come after that.
Right.
And then you're going to see that's the sort of thing that people can understand. That's when you might see some action from the public. What's really interesting in this is I was editor on a newspaper when Nixon resigned.
Right. August 1974. Right.
And so I was laying out the front page, ripping the wire for all the pictures and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So all these things are very indelible. What's really now interesting is that we should keep more of a diary of what's going on,
yeah.
not just pulling stuff off and cribbing from it, because these are the there will be events, not today, but very soon, events that you'll see on TV and will lodge in your mind, like the in the movie with Felt Deep Throat, coming out of the shadows,
right.
saying, this is where you got to look. Don't look there. Look over here.
Right. Well, and the other thing, you make an excellent point with the Deep Throat analogy, is that now that we know who Deep Throat was or is, you know, part of his motivation was getting even, because he thought...
Revenge.
He wanted revenge over L. Patrick Gray because he thought he should have been the director of the FBI. So, you know, there's probably other people
in
Washington.
In Washington, D.C., the way you get to the top is to be good at what you do and screw everybody else.
Right,
So everybody's been screwed by somebody, and you can just see, I'm not going to be screwed by this guy one more time.
Nice guy,
I'm going
less.
Yeah, right. No, this is the...
Again, I wanted to make another, you know, and I've touched on this a few minutes ago, another historical analogy with Watergate, is that the Watergate, a lot of the information was, you know, by Woodward and Bernstein, was out before the 1972 election, the presidential election. A lot of this was out. And it took a good year and a half or so for this to ferment. I remember my dad reading about this, and he was outraged. And this was, and even after the election, this was still a minor story.
But, you know, they did the same thing then that they did now, is that they made sure that the investigations returned their conclusions after
right.
the elections,
right.
so that they could, you know, get elected, and then we'll deal with that later.
Okay, so let's make a few predictions here, Tom, since we've been talking about this, about what's going to happen with the Valerie Plame situation and Fitzgerald's investigation. What are your predictions what do you predict is going to happen with this?
Well, just see to my pants?
Yes.
Libby will go, Roe will go, nobody will touch Cheney or Bush,
mm-hmm.
There will be no 2008 election.
Okay. Whoa. No 2008 election?
We've said this before. I'm telling you that there'll be, along with all this going on, using, as they have already done with the Katrina, the
right.
an excuse to introduce troops, you know, there will be, this will have worse outcomes than Watergate ever did.
So why, if there's not going to be 2008 elections, why will Rove and Lewis Libby need to go?
Because you'll throw people off the lifeboat
mm-hmm.
until it becomes absolutely clear that you're going to sink. And so I think that it will, that Rove will go, and so will Libby. But
right.
I think Rove, he may take a few others with him.
Right.
So I it's too detailed for me to say. But I think that some of these guys are going to go. But it will be done voluntarily, but there'll be a lot of animosity involved.
Well, I'm going to make the prediction, and I hope I'm wrong. I really do, in all sincerity, hope I'm wrong on my prediction. But I think Fitzgerald is going to be pressured. I mean, and by pressure, I mean they may, under the threat of life, him or his family, by some shadowy members of the Bush administration. I don't think any indictments are going to come out of this, or if they are, they're going to be misdemeanor indictments of some sort.
Well, you're thinking along the lines that in England, where they had the investigation there, and they appointed a special prosecutor, only to call a prosecutor, who came up with a sort of namby-pamby conclusions that everybody knew. I don't think that'll happen this time. The there's momentum being built up here, and if it reached that point where everybody knew something should have to come,
right.
And then it looked like it was a whitewash.
Right.
You know, they've got to throw, somebody's got to go to the Lions on this one.
Right. Well, we're going to have to leave it at that. We're getting towards the end of our first hour, so I just want to remind you that if you like our radio program, take a look at us on the internet. We're at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. And thank you for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. My name is Dan Gowerthy, along with my co-host,
Tom Nato.
And this is Left Turn on Bird Street. Stay tuned, and we'll have another hour coming. So come right back.